Welcome back to Housewarming, your inside look at real Irish homes transforming for a greener energy future. I'm Kim Buckley, and this week we're chatting to interior designers and podcasters Kate O'Driscoll and Jenny Sheehan. Kate and Jenny were both competitors on RTE's Home of the Year. However, they went from competing to collaborating and host the successful interiors podcast Rip It Up. On this episode, I sat down with them to chat about how they both ended up in interiors despite starting out on very different career paths. I asked them about their design style, their own homes, and I got a ton of great tips and advice which will be useful for anyone renovating their home. Let's get into it. Hi, Kate and Jenny.
Hi.
Kate O'Driscoll and Jenny Sheehan from the Rip It Up podcast.
Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us on Housewarming to chat about all things renovations and traditional homes. But we'll get to traditional homes later on. But first of all, you're not just podcast hosts. You're both finalists winner in RTE's Home of the Year.
Yeah.
How was that?
Many moons ago now.
That was so exciting. So the year that we were on, was it 2021?
I don't know, it was peak COVID anyway.
Peak COVID.
Yeah, which everyone was watching.
Yeah, and it was a fun recording challenge for the poor team because everyone had to be 2 metres apart, which in my tiny, tiny, tiny house just isn't possible. That just means you can't be in the same room at the same time. But it was also, it was a great time for watchers, I think, because everybody had been stuck in their homes for a year, if not more, and we're only gasping to be seeing the inside of other people's houses.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was really exciting.
Yeah, no one was going in anywhere. We're just looking, peeking through windows. So this was perfect for all of our collective nosiness. And Jen, it changed your life, really, I suppose. You've changed career paths now as a result.
Yeah, literally just this month, I've just finished up working. I was working for a long, 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 long time, well over a decade, in management and strategy consulting with Accenture, which I did love. But the pull of interiors and renovations has just been so huge over the past few years, and I loved it so much. So it feels like the right time to take the jump.
That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Kate, you're an interior designer also. Yeah. You took a bit of a curve as well.
I did. I was actually an engineer originally, so I worked in kind of medical devices, completely different non-creative field, I would say. Well, like semi-creative, we'll say. But then I moved into sustainability. I worked in that, in corporate strategy for sustainability for kind of big, large corporates for a number of years. And then when I had my babies, I just decided not to go back to the corporate world. And yeah, after Home of the Year, I guess demand for kind of services and renovation and interiors and that kind of side of it and consulting just blew up, and I've just been doing that since.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And now you have a podcast about it where you're chatting all things renovations, appliances, everything to do with the interiors of the home, which is amazing. And Kate, you're in the middle of a renovation. You're third.
Yeah. I've done three at this stage. So first was like a kind of a new building Galway we bought, kind of that was not derelict, but it just had never been finished. So we took it from second fix all the way through to finishing. Then we moved to Dublin and we kind of entered the world of Victorian homes and everything that goes along with those. So we bought a derelict kind of Victorian home and renovated that. That was the one that was on Home of the Year, the Jenny Beat Me. And then more recently, it's another Victorian home we've done again in the same area, just had a bit more space for our kind of growing family. So we decided to do it again, crazily enough.
And you kind of just moved into sustainability at that time too. So I feel like that was such like the conservation and sustainability aspect of those two, I think, went really well together, didn't they?
It was a challenge for sure.
Yeah.
And your home was, I suppose, like technically one of the nicest homes in Ireland. The interiors were stunning. You had a lovely egg chair in your kitchen.
Still
you were
it.
Basically a finalist in this interiors program. And then you were like, do you know what? No, I'm going to do it again. How did you get the energy to take that all on again?
Actually, I thought you were insane. I think renovating homes is like 50-50, right? 50% of people catch the bug, and then the other 50 are like, never ever again in my life will I do it. So I think we definitely caught the bug. Like, my husband and I like doing this kind of practical stuff in our free time anyway, as a bit of an outlet. And because I had kind of decided not to go back into the corporate world and make this my job, it was a kind of another challenge, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just felt like it was the area we wanted to stay in, but had a better garden, it had a bit more space for us to grow. And I always knew we'd have to kind of, you know, get a bigger house eventually if we decided to have family, which we did.
Okay, and what was the difference in renovating
your first Dublin Victorian home to this one, what were the challenges between the two of those homes?
The two of them are quite similar in that they're protected structures. So that in itself brings kind of limitations about what you can do to the original fabric of the building and maintaining kind of lime plaster and decorative plaster work and breathability where it needs to be breathable. So similar challenges. The only difference is that the first house was derelict. So a lot of the stuff was condemned. You know, the windows were condemned. There was so much damage that we could justify taking things out and replacing them with new to an extent. Whereas this house had been lived in by a family for 50 years. So it was technically habitable, although it had never really seen a deep retrofit or a deep renovation. That was the kind of challenge. We really had to work with the fabric of the building as was this time.
Okay, and Jenny, your home was also, I suppose, BU or exempt because it was quite old when you bought it. And then you did a big retrofit. You're only on your first retrofit.
Yes, yeah.
How many more do you think you have in you?
I have a few more in me. Now, I say it, I'll do up homes for sure because I definitely caught the bug and I love it. But I will have to be levered out of my house. Like that will, I think, always be my first love, my first home, and I don't see myself selling it.
It's a home of the year winner. I mean,
yeah, but I just love it. It's just made for me. Like I really love living there. I love the neighborhood. I love everything about it. And I love the size of it, even though I know it's tiny. But yeah, that was my first. It was BER exempt. It had nothing. Like it was built in the 1890s. It wasn't protected. So I didn't have to work around conservation restrictions because there was nothing in it to conserve. I mean, literally, like, it didn't really even have foundations. But I lived in it for maybe the first 9 months after I bought it, just saving and going for the planning permission and thinking about the design and everything. And oh my God, it was freezing. I remember getting the keys and moving in March 2019. And there was a cold snap. If anybody remembers March 2019, there was just this week when it was really cold. And I moved in, I had like an air bed and a sleeping bag, which my God, did I need. And it was just so cold because there was no central heating in the house. There was just this one massive central chimney breast with chimneys that opened into each of the three rooms. One of them had a broken gas fire in it. The others were just open. So it was freezing cold air coming down those. The windows were all single glazing and really drafty. There was this breeze block extension out the back because the original house wouldn't have had plumbing. So the toilet was originally, you know, kind of an outhouse that was really just a breeze block extension. So it was just freezing cold. It's night and day
so
now.
So you really got the benefit of your home energy upgrade then, going from basically no central heating. You're basically camping.
Yeah, I was basically camping.
And you wouldn't even call it glamping, like it was that bad, because mine was the same around the same time. We were both like, you know, hugging each other, being like, it's so bad, isn't it? It's so cold.
I remember sending Kate a video of my first night and you could see my breath. That's why I was in bed breathing. It was just so cold.
So going from camping in your own home to living in a super warm, cozy, renovated home, energy upgraded home. What is the difference? Is it like night and day?
Night and day, first, obviously, in terms of comfort. And then in terms of bills, like my bills are buttons because the house, again, it's tiny. And like, as we're on the topic of energy saving and sustainability, there's not much better you can do than just have a tiny, tiny footprint. So it's really easy to heat anyway, but it was brought up to a B or 2 rating, B or B2. So it's great for the green mortgage, but it just means the bills are super low. Like I really rarely have the heating on.
So what energy upgrades did you carry out back when you were doing the renovation?
Everything. Literally everything.
Okay.
Mostly because the house was almost fully knocked anyway. There wasn't much of it that was reusable, really. Mm-hmm. And there was an extension going in. And also when I bought it, it was a single story cottage and now it's a double story. But I wasn't able to extend above the apex of the roof. So we had to dig down a little bit in order to fit 2 stories into that roof. So the floor came up, underfloor heating went in, floor insulation went in, then the walls were fully insulated, and then all the windows had to be replaced anyway, so they went in with double glazing, and then obviously attic insulation as well.
Brilliant. And you've a heat
pump? Full retrofit. I looked into a heat pump. I wasn't able to get one at the time. I think I would be now, because the outdoor unit that was required back in 2020 was quite big and I just did not have the outdoor space for it. They've shrunk now. Mm-hmm. They're more compact. So I think if I looked into it again, I would be able to get one.
Okay. Mm. And Kate, going back to your first Victorian Dublin home that was derelict when you bought it, you did bring that up to a BE or B2, even though it was a listed building. This is pre-traditional homes pilot. How did you manage to do that?
A lot of research. No, we did. We did a lot of research on what we could actually do, and we worked with our architects. So like the key for these old homes is they remain breathable. So we wanted to keep the original plank flooring downstairs. So our only option was to lift those quilt insulation down to allow still that kind of breathability. So we did that from ground level up. All the new part that we built, the extension, we did an insulated subfloor there. So at least we had underfloor heating and warm floors and like a warm extension in the kitchen area, because I love being barefoot in the house, and which is not possible in Victorian houses usually. And then from there, we took back all the original lime plaster. It was quite damaged in most parts of the house. We got right back to that old plaster and laid in the walls. And then we did a breathable insulation called IQ Therm. There's a few different brands, but like IQ Therm, Calci Therm, and then we re-lime plastered. So it kind of maintained that breathability, but still gave us that U value for the walls that we needed. And then all the windows in the house were so badly rotted that they were condemned. So like we could replace those. So we were able to put in slim double glaze units into the old original kind of sash window frames, the timber frames.
So you got new sash windows.
Yeah.
The dream.
Yeah. And then up in the attic, we just lots of quilt insulation up in the attic as well. So we insulated everything we could with breathable insulation and tried to kind of maintain the original fabric as much as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, didn't touch cornicing and ceiling roses and any of that stuff.
And you worked a lot with the council, I suppose, in terms of bringing that up to spec, because you're not just allowed to your own devices. You have to, there's a lot of consultation involved.
There is, for sure. And I suppose for good reason as well, because I think if you put the wrong materials into these old buildings, you might not have a problem now. You might not have a problem next year, but you will have a problem. It might be in 5 years, it might be in 10 years. The plaster will start crumbling. There'll be moldy spots, there'll be damp spots, you know, so you really need to do it right. And we had a conservation specialist work with us in the architect's office that kind of told us the materials to use and how to do it and the order to do it. And our builder at the time was really experienced in old houses as well. So he gave us some really good advice as well.
So you left your warm and cosy B3 home and you moved into another freezing cold house.
Yeah, this one was pretty cold. And
you lived in it before the renovation as well. So you really got a sense of how cold it could get.
So we actually lived in the middle one as well. Like, so, but we didn't have kids
at the time. God,
we had no kitchen. There was just a concrete floor where the kitchen would have been, should have been, wasn't there. There was no kitchen. And we had plug-in oil rads because there's no central heating. And we used to go to bed in tracksuits with hot water bottles and have the oil rads either side of the bed. And that's how we lived for like 8 or 9 months.
Living on like microwave hot dogs.
My dog even had a heated blanket in her bed because the house was that cold in that March snap that Jenny mentioned. So we lived in that. But then the next house was a different kettle of fish. Now we had kids this time. So we obviously had to have the heating on as much as we could. There was people living in the house before we bought it. So, you know, the central heating system, albeit old, it functioned, but it was so inefficient. Like the windows were, you know, old. Some of the glass panes were broken, draftiness. So our bills were, I mean, through the roof for that winter that we had to live in it before we renovated. Because we just had to keep it warm because small kids and babies, you know, we had a newborn in there at one stage. So it was very cold, but it was very expensive to heat when we heated it.
Okay. Yeah. And have you experienced bills since you've renovated?
No, actually. We've just moved in the middle of the summer, so no. But we're hoping they'll be much lower this time.
Okay. So you did have to move out during the renovation.
Yes.
How long were you out of the house for?
9 months. Okay. Yeah, 9 months. And you know, funnily enough, we were in a rental for that 9 months. Mm-hmm. And it was a 1950s house in a housing estate that had been, say, prettied up for a rental. It was painted. It was, you know, a new kitchen put in. But you could tell none of those kind of groundworks were done.
So someone
who likes to walk around barefoot all the time, your feet would be two ice blocks in the kitchen on the tile floor. So even though the house, people came in and said, oh, this is a lovely modern house. And I'm like, it's not. They've done nothing. And our bills ended up being so expensive in a house that we thought looked kind of nice and
so
modern.
Important.
So
it's
amazing.
For when you're shopping for houses, like viewing houses.
So I'm looking forward to having a warm house.
Absolutely, I'd say so. You did your plans before the traditional homes pilot, unfortunately, was launched. And that's something that you definitely would have taken advantage of and used. So how have you gotten around bringing your home up to, you don't know the BER yet, but you're hoping to get in around the B area. How did you take that home and retrofit your home up to what you hope will be a B or B?
We're hoping it will. We've put in provisions for solar panels because we have a big garage in this house. We put an insulated subfloor down and we poured concrete this time. That was a big decision because the joists were completely rotten, so we had to do something and it was either replace them or do that. This time, although we did it last time, we weren't allowed to insulate our walls, this time just for conservation reasons. So we kind of thought that the floor might take up a lot of that slack. So that's probably the biggest change we've made. And then to the rear of the house where we've extended, that is a completely insulated structure, subfloor. All the windows are A-rated, even though they're sliding sash windows, they're spring sliding sash windows with no weights, no voids, no drafts. So they're actually A-rated windows at the back, even though our front are the kind of original windows. So we're hoping it'll kind of balance out to an overall good rating. And we've closed up the 6 or 7 open chimneys, open fireplaces that were in the house as well.
And you have kind of old style windows on your home as well. So you're kind of marrying the, you're I suppose you're nodding to how traditional and old your home is.
Yeah.
But you've also got, you know, really high up to spec windows. Have they made a massive difference?
Such a huge difference. So in the front, yeah, I kept the traditional style or that was in the old house. It's called a T window. So it just has one larger, you know, horizontal kind of window on top and then two of the narrow windows that go underneath it. So that style is fairly easy to replicate. It isn't hugely complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have the weights or anything of sash windows. So I kept that style. I got them remade with a wooden frame to kind of keep the traditional look and feel of it, but they are double glazed, so they're super, super warm. And then in the back, it's all sliding windows. It's all Aluclad. And it's all, I think, triple glazed actually in the back, and it is hot, like it gets hot.
Okay.
or it stays warm, which is great. So yeah, it's just completely different. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. And talking about design and nodding to, I suppose, the heritage of your home, tell us how you kept that in mind when you were decorating the inside.
Yeah, lots
of ways.
And
describe your home for people who haven't watched Home with a Year and haven't seen it. Tell us about it.
So my home is a really small terrace cottage. It's in Dublin 6. It was an old workers' cottage. It was built originally for ESB workers that were nearby, and some of the firemen in the local Ratmines station would have lived there as well. Their stories, I got a lovely letter from the former owner's nieces of the home. She passed away, unfortunately, the owner, talking about the family being raised there. I think there was 10 kids in that house or something like that.
Oh my God.
Since heard stories of 14 children being raised in those houses. And these are small. I think it was either 38 or 42 square metres when I bought it.
So just one bedroom.
Rooms. Yeah, exactly. A living room, a kitchen, and you know, tiny little bedroom and one larger bedroom. So I guess they just took shifts sleeping. I don't know, I don't know how they did it. But these are small, small cottages. Mm-hmm. So mine now, when you go into it, there's two steps down. There's a downstairs kind of home office, spare bedroom, open plan living, kitchen, dining with a little extension out the back. There's a bathroom downstairs. And then upstairs is just one main bedroom and one main bathroom. So from a cottage perspective, like, it is an, you know, it's an old style cottage. I didn't want it to be super, super modern. I didn't want there to be huge amounts of glass, even though I do quite like that look in certain modern extensions. I didn't want loads of too modern materials either. So I stuck with wood where I could, especially for the windows, for the doors, etc. I think that looks really, really nice and keeps things kind of traditional. And then there is some, I didn't go too hardcore into like the cottage core aesthetic. It's a little bit too chintzy for me. But I did keep quite a lot of cottage style decor there. So I have a lot of paneling wood, for example, in the downstairs bedroom and the upstairs bedroom. And then in terms of just colours, I kept it very, what's the word for this?
Muted?
No, totally the opposite. Quite colourful, but in like big, bold and not too bright colours, kind of more jewelly
brave
colours. Yeah.
Oh, jewel toned. Yeah, gorgeous. Like sort of dark blues.
Yeah, and richer.
Yeah,
richer,
rich, rich and cosy. Lovely.
Rich and cosy, that's the word.
Okay. And Kate, obviously your home was stunning in the inside in Rathmines, your Victorian home that you were on Home of the Year with. Is your style going to be different in your new home? Or
no.
How it's going to be the same?
I don't think so. Like, I tend to lean into modern traditional, I suppose. I like kind of traditional homes, but I don't like too much fuss and faff. Like, I like it to be very livable.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much stuff for my kids to break and not too much stuff for me to dust. So a little bit more of a pared back traditional look. And then in terms of colours, I'm not as bold as Jenny maybe when it comes to colours, but I do like real like earthy tones. So like my last house, I bought a couch in the colour brick, because it was the same colour as the red brick houses you could see out the front sash window. And I think it's a really nice way to kind of tie in the kind of surroundings. So I tend to go for those kind of earthy greens and terracottas that are kind of in the areas of those kind of mature houses.
It's not going to be a mirror image of your old home, though. How is it different?
I've gone for a pretty bold kitchen this time, I would say. Now, I will say, my last kitchen was kind of bold at the time. You've probably seen 100 green kitchens at this stage. But 5 years ago, there wasn't that many, I suppose, when I put it in. This time, I've gone for quite a deep wood, 3 metre high kitchen.
A kind of a warmish wood,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, almost
really
a nod to mahogany, actually. It, like, because it's not mahogany, it's oak, it's stained. But it almost is just a nod to that old-fashioned kind of wood that you'd see in houses. So although it's a modern-style kitchen, I think the colours are still in that kind of keeping of traditional homes. Mm-hmm. Like all the floorboards, we restored them last time. We always stay with that kind of dark stained, you know, that kind of traditional dark stain on floorboards and things. So I think a lot of natural materials, a lot of rich kind of earthy tones and deep shades, I think you'll see more of, I think, this time.
And now that you have two small kids and a dog, how are you incorporating them into the design of your home?
Kids, you just have to not be precious. And I'm not, to be honest. I think houses are to be lived in. And Jenny and I talk about this on our podcast a lot. Like, think about how you're going to use the home before you design it. It's so easy to get bogged down in Instagram and say, oh, I love that, you know, that living room. Mm-hmm. But does it work for your family? Does it work how you spend time in that room? So, I don't know. I try and make life easy for myself. So, I know kids will have toys everywhere. So, storage, they can literally throw stuff in at the end of the day and I can have the place kind of clear. And then where we've put in French doors, I said I wanted the bottom 45, 50 centimetres solid wood and they couldn't understand why wouldn't you just do glass to the floor?
Hand
I said, handprints? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be looking at a wet ground outside. So I was like, those little things make my life a little easier.
I can't cope with the handprints. They're just there now. But I'm not wiping them off anymore. I'm just like, that's the design on the glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's only for a few years.
Absolutely.
And glass,
it's so
easy to clean. So like, you just have to live with it. What are you going to do?
100%.
Yeah.
And for your clients then, I suppose you both have a wide range of, like, you've a very small home, your house is bigger, but then you're also helping clients with large homes and you with clients with small homes. What are people's priorities now when they're starting a renovation? Are they very fixated on the home energy aspect of things? Is that something that people are more and more considering?
Yeah.
I think it's just comfort living in the house. I think I have a lot of clients that either have old homes like the one I have, and they just want to make it more livable. And I find people, when they buy period homes especially, they're not set out for modern living. They're a load of little warren of little rooms. They're not open plan. The family aren't all together. And I think people want to do that, but they're afraid with high ceilings and big open spaces, the house is going to get colder. Mm-hmm. So they're like, how can I work to improve all that? So they think about the glazing a bit more. They think about the insulation on the floors, if there's going to be a new floor poured. And they think about, like, well, should I put in a heat pump? Should I put in a hybrid system? Should I put in a gas boiler alone? You know, so a lot of people ask me those questions as well. So I kind of do consults on the technical side a little bit as well.
Okay.
Before we kind of get into the how the house is going to look, think about how it's going to be laid out and how it's going to function first, I think.
I think people definitely are curious about what is going to actually be worth it. Yeah. Like, especially if they're not quite sure what their extension is going to look like, or if they're not quite sure how long it's going to take for the work to get done, or are they going to be like living where they are for the next maybe 4 or 5 years while they save up and then they're going to do renovation. I think people are one of the main questions I get asked is like, what's actually worth investing in? What's worth the effort? Mm-hmm. What can I actually do, first of all? And when, what's worth it? And in what stages is it worth it? Mm-hmm. Like, should I just go straight for solar panels, or should I go full hog for a heat exchange system or something like that, or to insulation, or where do you go? I think that's something people are always curious about.
And what's your advice to people then? Like, if people are just clueless and they're like, look, I really want a really warm home, but, you know, I'm really interested in the design. I want to marry the two. Like, where do you start? And what's your advice to people who are kind of clueless in that respect?
It depends on their budget massively, I think. And it depends on the level of work they're planning to do in the home. You know, if this is a home that they don't want to spend a huge amount of money on, it might be draft stripping. It might be as simple as that, you know, because they'll get the biggest bang for their buck and they don't have to go taking out old windows or whatever. And then some people are in a position where they can't afford the full renovation now. So they've bought a house in the area they want. They want a kind of stopgap kind of renovation for 5 years. And maybe if they're still there, then they'll do the big renovation. So those people, I say, sometimes it's worth investing in the windows, because the windows will be there to stay. Mm-hmm. And even if you do a major renovation, you can refit those windows, you know, at not a huge cost. So there's parts of the building that you can upgrade now that will still stand in 5 years. And then there's some parts that will be sunk costs. So we try and kind of work around, you know, the budget and their time frame, I think.
Okay.
That's generally what I do.
And do you think your clients are interested, obviously, in the warmth and comfort of the home? They're interested in saving money in terms of bills. Are they interested in the actual climate aspect and the sustainability of it all, and and not contributing to greenhouse gases and having an energy efficient home? Is that something that you find people are passionate about?
Yes, some are. I would say the ideal is when those two worlds collide, and like, what, you know, doing something that has a positive impact on emissions and climate and everything like that marries with lower bills. Like, that's obviously the dream, and I think that's usually the case, especially for home upgrades. That tends to work. Probably more are interested in, you know, how do I stay warm and how do I keep my bills down? But certainly, definitely us anyway, I know we're both interested in how do you make sure that you have the least emissions that you can. But you have to be practical as well. I think, like, there's a lot of confusion, definitely for me, and I know for a lot of clients as well, around what are the things that you do that actually have a positive impact on climate emissions, on global warming. Like, should I swap my old banger of a car that is kind of maybe not the most energy efficient for an electric car, or are batteries bad? I've heard that mining for the minerals is bad. So it's not always the most straightforward question to be like, what actually has the net positive impact on the planet? So you kind of just have to do the best with what you have. The number one thing I always advise, like, Kate's totally spot on, you to make sure that you're making the right choice for your budget and your timeline. But I think insulation is something that you'll never regret. It's the first step to anything, because you can go fitting in solar panels and fitting in heat pumps and doing whatever you like, but if the house isn't insulated, then it doesn't help. Whereas if you insulate your house to a really high spec, even if you can't right now, you know, afford solar panels, you don't have the roof space or whatever it might be, or like me, you couldn't fit the heat exchange pump on the outside, your bills will still be really low, and that lowers emissions ultimately as well. So usually the worlds collide, I think.
I think so, yeah. And that's the ideal, really, if it's a win-win for people. And I think people are happy to go along with it if it's a win-win. Do I believe it's people's main priority? I would say no. Like, maybe, you know, there's obviously exceptions to it, but I think, you know, if it's going to save the money in the long run, they'll absolutely go along with it. And then I think, you know, sustainability is something that you have to see, again, where your impact is. I always used to say to people when I worked in sustainability full time, go away and do your own carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised at where it actually all sits. You'd be forgiven for believing like all your carbon footprint is because you ate a burger this week. But actually look at the breakdown. It's mainly your house, you know, so that's the first place you should really look. Then maybe it's your travel. So people look at maybe electric cars if they can, you know, or less air travel and things like that. So I think it should be personal as well. Look at your carbon footprint and see where the biggest impact drivers are for you.
And I suppose undergoing a home energy upgrade is possibly one of the most sustainable things you can do in your home. But how else can people be sustainable at home? And how are you sustainable at home? I mean, are you recycling and upcycling? Are you using secondhand paint? Tell me a bit about that. I know it's a very loaded question and we could be here all day, but give me the highlights.
I'm a little bit of a recycling Nazi now in my house, to be honest. And my husband's always like, is this bit recyclable? And I'll give him the technical reason as to why it is or isn't, because I know from my old job. And like, yeah, I would absolutely do that as much as I can. And I'll, you know, do the bits that I suppose fit into my lifestyle as much as I can, I think. How about
secondhand furniture and stuff?
Love it.
Yeah.
We both love it, I think. Like, I'm on adverts every single night. Like, I will trawl adverts, like Jenny and I talk about this. Instead of trawling like Instagram or Facebook or whatever, I'll take out adverts and I'll put my radius to 2 kilometres and I'll see what's for sale around me. Or if the stuff I'm not using in my house and I haven't touched in the last 6 months, it goes on adverts and I resell it.
And what's been your best find on adverts?
I found a vintage G-Plan mid-century wardrobe, solid teak, for €80.
Oh my gosh.
And they just had it up as solid wood wardrobe. Like, if I bought an antique shop, it could be 600-800 euros, maybe more.
And you almost didn't want to say, by the way, you know, you're sitting on a gold mine here.
My husband actually went to collect it with another guy because it was so heavy. I was like, I think I was pregnant at the time as well. I was like, I won't be able to lift it down the stairs with you. And it was an old lady, and he kind of said, this is worth a little bit more. And he tried to give her a little bit more money for her, and she wouldn't take it. She said, I just want to get rid of the thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Jenny, how are you sustainable at home?
I think I'm big into recycling as well. I recycle everything. But a lot of my sustainability initiatives in my personal life are kind of accidental. So the first one is that I just hate shopping. I really hate it. Clothes shopping, it's just not for me. I have a weird shaped body and nothing really fits me well. And I just hate going. I just get frustrated and I don't like it. So all of my clothes are ancient. I will get everything repaired. I go into the alteration centre in South Ann Street. They'll fix anything. Or I go to Clegg's shoe repair in Rathmines. Like this pair of shoes, I actually was super glued. My boss was laughing at me this morning because I was super gluing the toe of these back together because it was coming off. Because I just don't want to buy new ones. Yeah. And that's accidentally sustainable because, you know, I'm just not buying new clothes. I'm not contributing to fast fashion because I hate it. I hate just trying the clothes on. I don't want to do it. So I don't do that. And the same goes for homewares too. Like the house is done and I don't tend to buy that much new stuff. And the second thing then is I'm quite handy. Kate's actually handier than me, I would say. But I think having a mindset of something can be fixed and you can give it a go is a really, really good way to keep your house sustainable and just not... There's so many things that you probably have lying around that are a bit broken. And you might just throw it out and it might not be worth your while fixing. But if you have any bit of confidence and any bit of curiosity at all in how something can be fixed, there's so many YouTube videos. There's like loads of night courses out there that are really worth doing. And just equipping yourself with a little bit of DIY knowledge can be a great way to just keep things going for longer and not buy new things.
Because you can sand and you can repaint and you can... Yeah. And how about for clients who are in the market for, you know, they're like, oh, I really want, you know, mid-century modern everything. Like, where do you go to help them find that stuff? Would you advise them to buy new or do you hunt for old treasures?
It depends, I guess. It depends on the client. Some of the clients are a bit more kind of hands-on like we would be and they'd be up for a little bit of light sanding and maybe re-oiling something if they got it old. Then I think you can really find gems for next to nothing. Mm-hmm. I think if you're looking for the polished antiques, you'll pay as much as you will for nearly new stuff, I think. But you'll still get better quality, I think, for the same price. So like I'd always say try secondhand, go to the, you know, secondhand vintage stores, you know, the charity shops we always talk about on Francis Street. You know, they're like the best for furniture. So like I love to, like Jenny, just buy less stuff. And when you buy, buy kind of considerately and like buy better. Just better quality.
I think time and patience is probably the key to getting that look right, like to getting what you want for in a sustainable way and like get the right quality for the right price. But Kate, you've got really good tips for search terms. I think that's something that people can really, like just like looking for a bargain, like walking into a shop and knowing what to look for, knowing what
to
ask for.
Don't tell people my search terms. They're really good.
Tell us.
I think we did a podcast episode on this a while ago, so you can go back and listen to that as well. But you've some, like you just said there, like solid wood is always great. So anything solid wood is always going to be really
good. Usually works for furniture as well, means it's good quality.
If you're looking at pictures, anything that's peeling off, that's probably going to be MDF or something wrapped or chipboard, maybe even anything that just has little chips in it, that's a good sign because that can usually be sanded out or polished out or something like that. The right search terms can get you some really good bargains, I think. Yeah. But time and patience, that's the key. And then I think you have to be like, everything with sustainability, there has to be a realistic approach to it. Of course, you can buy some new stuff. If there's something that you need that's just going to fit a certain part of your room, of course, you have to just buy that new. Like, that's fine. It's a mix, you know?
Cool. And finally, this will be different for you, Kate, but Jenny, has the red dot changed? Where is your favourite spot?
They wouldn't let us keep it. I actually have a bone to pick friends with. I was like, can I keep this as a keepsake? No. Right, fine, okay.
They left it behind in my house.
Did they?
Yeah, but I told them, like, I should have kept it.
You should have given it to me. I wanted it. I really wanted to put it in my downstairs bathroom because I love my downstairs bathroom. It's got a disco ball in it. I just think it's a really fun place to be and I love it. And the really nice producer, I think she was trying to think of me. She was like, do you really want the nation to know you as the girl whose favourite spot is the bathroom?
Sitting on the toilet.
So I was like, fine, I'll put it in the garden, I suppose. And I do really like my garden. I'll give a shout out to my friend Johnny Gannon. He did an amazing job. He installed this vertical garden wall for me and I just love it. The whole thing is lovely. So it ended up out there. But yeah, my red dot space, really.
In
my heart is in my downstairs toilet. Yeah.
Fabulous. Absolutely. And in your new house, Kate, then where would the red dot go?
My egg chair is back.
Oh, still.
I just turned 40 like a week ago, ago. And my husband hung my egg chair back in Pride of Place for my 40th. Great. As well as other presents.
And that's like, in the kitchen.
I'm an acts of service kind of girl.
That's in the kitchen, is it?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And it's looking back to the kitchen and back through the other room. So it's like a whole view of the whole house. I can watch the kids in one room and watch people in the kitchen in the other. So it's perfect.
As they come towards you to steal your croissant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode, but we're not saying goodbye to Jenny and Kate just yet. If you check back in later in the season, I continue my chat with the girls and with SEAI's Stephen Farrell to discuss the traditional homes pilot and how best to upgrade period homes. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode where I'll be getting lots more tips from building engineer Kieran McCarthy and chatting with homeowner Deirdre De Burka about her beautiful home in Cabinteely in Dublin. If you'd like to find out more about any of the grants or schemes mentioned on this episode, you can head to the SEAI website. And there are also links in the show notes. And finally, we also have a special bonus episode on the feed, all about green loans and finance. So check that out if you're getting serious about your renovation plans.